This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Hawaiians have been waiting almost 40 years for the Mauna Loa volcano to erupt again. And it is now. The mountainous fountain of molten lava first emerged from the sea about 400,000 years ago and has been shaping the islands and Hawaiians themselves ever since.
The volcano was one of the reasons why I found a deeper purpose in photography. I was a volunteer at USGS for 2 years here at the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. And had it not been for that, I don't know if I would be so focused and like passionate about nature.
Almost every day since Mauna Loa began erupting last month, Andrew Richard Hara has gone out and up in the air to photograph Mauna Loa's magnificent and dangerous beauty.
I went on the ground the first night, and that was really cool just to see the glow from the mountain and all of that. And I have some relationships that have been built with Paradise Helicopters. And so we've been doing eruption overflights early in the morning in a helicopter and being able to, you know, look from below and observe what's happening. Volcano flows can be beautiful, but also very dangerous. And so flying in a helicopter, it's not like you're in a plane at 30,000 feet and you're looking above. You get to interact with the land. You fly near or at a safe distance over the lava. The helicopter, because of the thermals, will rise and then you'll fall. If winds come, you get blown and you can feel that. If you are able to fly near the lava close enough, you can feel the heat from the helicopter. It can be a gift to be able to enjoy it in that way. Watch a 300-foot fire fountain erupt. It's like, it's awe-inspiring and like, wow, this is like, I'll never see this again. And how beautiful, but how tragic. It's a piece of poetry. It's a beauty of darkness and light. Working with indigenous tribes, there is always a deeper meaning for place, space, and people. So in this culture, and I'm not Hawaiian, but I'm born and raised here, but the local culture here and the Hawaiian culture, the connection to place and space is, like my friend said this morning, actually, when we were watching the glow, is it's like it's a part of your family. There's like this connection that it's not just somewhere you live or somewhere you buy. And so when things like this, like the eruption, do occur, it is the earth speaking with us. It's beautiful. And I think there is a lightness to this eruption that is significantly different than most, because it's not situated anywhere near residential areas. If the eruption continues, it could. And at that time, maybe the mood and energy changes. But for now, I think we can all, as a group, kind of stand in awe and wonder.
Andrew Richard Hara. He's a photographer capturing the Mauna Loa eruption in Hawaii. And we have a link to his stunning portfolio on our website, onpointradio.org. Well, Catherine Cruz joins us now. She is host of The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. She's been a reporter in Hawaii since 1983, and she joins us from Honolulu. Catherine, welcome to On Point.
Nice to be here, Meghna. Thank you so much.
So what does it look like?
It is spectacular. It really is. I mean, I'm on another island. I'm on Oahu. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you just look at the visuals, you know, the live streaming, it's available. You just are humbled by this power, and you just have to respect, you know, what we're witnessing and heed the warnings, because, it's very powerful. Very, very, very powerful.
Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, ever since the Mauna Loa began erupting again last month, what has the significance of that been for the community there in Hawaii?
Well, I think historically, you know, the last time that the mountain erupted, it was a short one, a couple of weeks. And when this started a week ago Monday, the officials were saying, well, you know, once they determined the direction that it was flowing, they said it might be a couple of weeks before it hits the main road there, Saddle Road, the Daniel K. Inouye Highway. And, you know, it's about a mile and a half from that main artery. And so, you know, everybody has been using this past week and a half to plan. You know, it's not threatening any residences or anything like that, but you do have to be careful because, you know, we're dealing with a very powerful force.
Okay. So, you know, I don't just want to talk about the potential damage that the volcano can do, but we should address that head on, though. Like, what are some of the things that could happen as the lava flow advances? For people who don't know, you know, that area of Hawaii very well, help us understand what could potentially happen.
Well, if that artery is cut off, you know, I mean, you know, it's the Big Island, so a lot of people depend on that road to get from, you know, the east side to the west side, you know, for work, you know, a lot of just county services, you know, garbage, you know, it's a transportation a thoroughfare. And so when I've talked to the utilities, you know, they're concerned. They want to make sure that they've got redundancy in their systems, whether it, you know, when it comes to power or telephone service, you know, internet, that kind of a thing. And it's just something basic like, okay, we've got to make sure our power plants have enough fuel. And what they normally do for, you know, a natural disaster, you know, a hurricane or whatnot, they try and keep about a 30-day supply of fuel, you know, to keep things humming. So it's just things like that, you know, because you've got one harbor on one side, another harbor on the other, but you've just got to make sure that, you know, we have enough to keep our community going, because we just don't know what will happen with this lava flow.
Mm. Well, I want to play a little bit from a message that was sent to us by an On Point listener. This is Carrie Yost. She's in Keauʻi in Hawaii.
We do have the glow from our house almost every morning. We're just east, about 25 miles east and under the mountain. Luckily, this is the best eruption that we could ask for, since it is going due north. It is going in an area of federal lands, and so homes, farms, rangeland, not really getting affected right now. There is some dry grasslands that may get affected, but what we've seen, fissure lines, beautiful fissures that go about 200 feet. If Mauna Loa was going to go, this was absolutely the best way it could go.
That's On Point listener Carrie Yost. And by the way, she sent us some incredible photos of what she is seeing with her own eyes. Those fissures, those glowing orange fiery fissures she talked about. We've got those pictures at onpointradio.org. Now, Catherine, hang on here for a second, because I want to turn to Eric Clemente now. He's a volcanologist and associate professor of earth and environmental studies at Denison University, and a writer for Rocky Planet blog in Discover magazine. Professor Clemente, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, based on what we know so far about how Mauna Loa is erupting, you heard Hawaiian Carrie Yost say this is the best way it could go thus far. What do you think about that?
I mean, that's probably a very safe characterization of what's going on. This is a eruption that thus far has been on the sort of rocky slopes of Mauna Loa and has not encroached on pretty much anything or anyone beyond the weather station that's up on near the summit of Mauna Loa. And beyond that, it's been something that's been spectacular to watch. The USGS live stream is sort of hypnotic in just being able to see the lava fountaining from that fissure 3.
So can you tell me more about what you're seeing when you, I mean, you're not in Hawaii, you're in Ohio, but can you tell me what you see when you watch that live stream?
Yeah, I mean, so if you watch the live stream, that what you see is there looks like there's a little cone that has built up. And as the name implies, it looks like a fountain of lava, more or less coming out of the middle of that cone. And that's this new magma when it's under the ground that becomes lava in name once we get it onto the surface, sort of churning and forcing its way up onto the surface and then being fed out of the crater that's in this little vent that's formed, leaving lava flows that are the ones that are trailing down the side of the volcano towards the Saddle Road. So what I'm looking at it, you can just see the plumes of volcanic gases, especially when the images are at night, mm-hmm. like it is for when I'm looking at it at this moment. It is, you can just see the glowing lava, and you see all these bombs that are being thrown out of the volcano, lava bombs being chunks of molten rock that either land on the ground still molten, or they solidify a little bit before they hit the ground, and they're kind of spattering all over the place. And it's just like a churning, you know, for lack of a better word, maybe it's a good word, a maelstrom of molten rock that is being unleashed from inside the vent.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at it right now, and that's exactly what it looks like. So folks, the USGS live stream is quite incredible. It's better than any, you know, movie, any Hollywood mm-hmm. movie of a volcano. Catherine, help me, remind me here. The last time Mauna Loa erupted, were you in Hawaii?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. You know, and like I said, it was a short episode, and they're hoping that this one is only going to last a couple of weeks, too, because, you know, the longer it goes, right, if the flow is diverted, you know, then communities are, you know, at risk. And, you know, I know when this first started, we had just talked to Hawaii County Mayor Mitch Roth, and he had just come off a flyby. And he basically said, you know, of all the directions that this could be flowing, this is the best possible option because people are not in harm's way. And the first thing it did was it cut off that observatory access road, that climate station that was just mentioned.
Yeah. Well, when we come back from a quick break here, we're going to talk more about what could happen as Mauna Loa continues its spectacular eruption and the significance of this volcano to Hawaiians. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about the eruption of Hawaii's Mauna Loa volcano, the first time the volcano has erupted in almost 40 years. And I'm joined today by Catherine Cruz. She's host of The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. She's with us from Honolulu. And Eric Clemente joins us as well. He's a volcanologist and associate professor of Earth and Environmental Studies at Denison University. And by the way, if you've got a question about Mauna Loa or about volcanoes in general, definitely feel free to hop on social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter at On Point Radio and send us your question. Now, obviously, the volcanologists in Hawaii are quite busy right now, but we had a chance to connect with one of them, Ingrid Johansson. She's a geophysicist at the Hawaii Volcano Observatory, part of the United States Geological Survey, or USGS. And she told us that Mauna Loa has been a textbook eruption so far, both in the way it started at the summit and then moved into a rift zone, and the clues it gave even before the eruption.
We went from heightened unrest to eruption very quickly. And this was something we anticipated based on the experiences in 1975, 1984, that also had very little warning before lava hit the ground. There was an increase in seismicity and an increase in inflation starting in September of this year. And we were essentially plateaued at this new high level since September. But within an hour of yet another increase in activity, there was lava on the ground.
Now, Eric Clemente, that word inflation has a certain connotation to most people, which is not what it means regarding a volcano. Inflation is when, I guess, the magma chamber underground swells enough that you can see surface swelling on the actual side of a volcano. Is that right?
Yeah. So the magma that's rising up, it's rising up from the source that's probably, you know, 10 kilometers or more beneath the surface. And as it rises up into the volcano itself, it's going to take up space. And that then, kind of like a balloon, it will start to change its shape as more magma comes in there. And we can measure those changes to a very precise and a small degree to look at both sort of the magnitude of that inflation and the location, which can sort of point volcanologists towards like the where an eruption might be coming from, or at least where the magma is coming in inside the volcano. Mm.
You know, what you say reminds me of Mount St. Helens, right? 1980, I believe. I was actually in Beaverton, Oregon at the time, so was not obviously next to it, but close enough. And I mean, people can still find photographs, right, of Mount St. Helens, of like literally the side of the volcano distending outward, right, before it had that massive eruption.
Yep. So there we're looking at inflation that was on the scale of like meters, tens of meters. You could really just stand back away from the volcano and look at it and see the cracks on the volcano and on the glaciers on Mount St. Helens. And there was no question that inflation was happening on that volcano. But a lot of the times, the inflation that we're talking about at some place like Mauna Loa or Kilauea, the other active volcano on the Big Island of Hawaii, are on the scale of maybe like centimeters, or maybe even less than that sometimes. And you wouldn't be able to just look at Mauna Loa and say, oh, wait, it's been inflating. I can tell because it's that subtle of an inflation, but it's enough that people monitoring the volcano would take notice.
Okay. So is there sort of a threshold where it goes from beyond taking notice to predicting that an eruption might come?
That's always tricky because the prediction game is not one that the volcanology community likes to get into. We kind of think of it more as forecasting what might happen and looking at probability of a typical event. So an example here might be, you know, we have inflation at a volcano like Mauna Loa that we know is a relatively active volcano. It hadn't erupted for almost 40 years, but that's sort of atypical for its usual pattern of eruptions over the last few hundred years. But it's still an active volcano. So a little bit of inflation that might be in the scale of a few centimeters or more would be enough to make volcanologists monitoring the volcano feel like we're headed towards maybe a new eruption. Now, there's also been detected inflation on volcanoes like South Sister in Oregon. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a volcano that is much less active. It's a different kind of volcano than we have in Hawaii. And there they have measured a couple periods of inflation that have been on the scale of maybe a centimeter or so over southwestern side of the volcano. And it was an event that the U.S. Geological Survey volcanologists made note of, but I don't think anyone was concerned at that point that an eruption was in the works. It might have been you take this data and you fit it into geophysical models to see maybe what's the best fit, how deep and how much stuff. And it was a very small volume, fairly deep. So it's a very different, you have to compare.
You know, I'm only sort of just closing my eyes because, Eric, literally that is the mountain I hope to climb this summer. I want to just do the hike up South Sister. I still can, is what you're telling me, right? Hopefully.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yep. For sure.
Good. Folks, it's actually like it's a hard climb, but a doable climb. So and in a beautiful part of Oregon. So if you want to hike South Sister, come join me this summer. But Catherine, you know, I first of all, I know I'm sharing this space with you, another public radio host. So if there's any questions that you have for Eric, please feel free to jump in with questions for him. But I also wanted to ask you, you know, again, for people on the mainland, when we think about Hawaii as a volcano, you know, we're really sort of myopically focused on these moments where the volcanoes are erupting. But can you tell me a little bit about, like, how much, if at all, like, Hawaiian life is sort of informed or interacts with these, you know, beautiful forces of nature that have created and are continuing to shape the islands?
Well, you know, if you've ever been to the Big Island and you drive, it's just nothing but incredible landscapes. And I remember when I first saw the lava fields, I thought, wow, this looks like an endless pan of burned brownies, you know, because that's what you just see, this, you know, blackened area where the lava has cooled. But, you know, here on Oahu, you know, we're getting incredible, you know, sunrises and sunsets because of the fog. And that's basically volcanic smog that hangs in the air. You know, we did talk to some health officials, you know, and they're just warning people, yeah, if you're downwind, you know, be careful, you know, wear an N95 mask if you're compromised, you know, and just either leave the area if you can. But you know, at this point, it's not that much of an issue. You know, we've got a lot of winds today. The winds are picking up. But it's just things to be mindful of, you know. You just get used to it. You just have to respect the power of the mountain. And, yeah. You know, you can't control it.
You know, you heard that the first person diary from Andrew a little earlier, who said that it's, you know, the earth is talking to us when it does these things. And I just wonder, what is the significance of Mauna Loa's eruption to indigenous Hawaiians right now?
Well, you know, there are people who, you know, do respect Pele's power. And, you know, some folks are going up to areas to put, you know, offerings because they just know, you know, the legend of Pele, you know, the volcano goddess, and they respect that force. You know, in the past, you know, there were attempts to try and divert the flow of lava to protect communities. You know, they tried to bomb it, you know, before. You know, they haven't had very much success.
They tried to bomb a lava flow?
Yeah, to try and divert it away from communities. And this was back in the 40s, I think, 50s. But, you know, so it's just amazing, you know, what you have to deal with, you know.
That sounds kind of nuts, Catherine. Sorry, like, yes. Just like bombing a lava flow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, General Patton, well, he wasn't general at the time, but yeah, that was a Western approach. The folks over at the observatory, you know, asked the Army, you know, to help them. You know, is there some way that we could manage this flow? So that's one approach. And then there's the, you know, the Native Hawaiian approach is respect, and work with it. You know, you can't control it. But you are going to get, like I said, the authorities that are trying to keep public safety, you know, foremost, to do what they can to protect, you know, life and property.
Yeah. Eric, just out of curiosity, would you recommend trying to bomb a lava flow into submission?
Yeah, that was so. That's an interesting story that has to do with this sort of this idea of, you know, how do we stop molten rock from moving forward? And the idea there was, you know, can we disrupt the front of the flow enough that it wasn't going to continue to progress downslope in the same way? And of course, it wasn't a very successful attempt. There's been lots of attempts that have been made all over the world for ways to try to divert or stop lava flows. They've used things like helicoptering in Jersey barriers, like you'd see on the highway, to push the lava flow in another direction, or building big berms with bulldozers. Probably the most famous was one in Iceland, that there's a lava flow that was potentially going to close a fairly important fishing harbor. So they just got big pumps and sprayed seawater on the lava flows to solidify them before they could close the harbor. And they actually ended up being somewhat successful with that, but it lucked out that it was right near the ocean and they had all that water to work with. But most of the time, trying to get lava flows or mud flows or pyroclastic flows, the sort of ash type flows that come down volcanoes, trying to do anything about diverting those is challenging and not particularly rewarding in a hazard mitigation sense.
I'm sorry to laugh, but your kind and thoughtful selection of words there is better than I would have come up with, which my phrase was going to be folly. But
it's nuts.
Yeah. But I mean, the reason why I just kind of shake my head here is this is actually the perfect opportunity for us to talk about just going over some basics about like Hawaii, the Hawaiian Islands. And I hope I'm remembering this correctly, they would not exist were it not for these volcanoes, right? I mean, the volcanoes are erupting. And then what is it? The Pacific Plate is moving. And so therefore, as the volcanoes erupt over thousands and millions of years, you have the formation of the chain of the Hawaiian Islands. Eric, is that right?
Yeah. So that the Big Island is the most... almost the youngest volcano. There's a volcano that's offshore of the Big Island that's underwater still, Lauihi, that is probably the sort of the youngest manifestation. But you want to picture it that there's this hot material rising up through the Earth's mantle, thousands, hundreds and thousands, or hundreds to thousands of kilometers beneath the surface, that is hot, solid rock that then melts when it reaches close to the surface, and that produces the magma that then rises up and, you know, kind of like holding a lighter underneath a piece of paper, kind of burns its way through the Pacific Plate and produces volcanoes. And as the Pacific Plate moves, you're more or less burning a track through the plate as it moves over the hotspot. And the Hawaiian hotspot is a chain of, you know, islands and then seamounts that were islands in the past that have now been eroded by millions of years of ocean activity. So they're now underwater. And they almost, you know, you can trace that track in the Pacific Plate almost back to areas around Kamchatka in Eastern Russia. So it's a very long track that has been, I think that some of the oldest stuff is of 70, 75 million years old. So it's a long history of islands being born, eruptions happening, the plate moving on, and the volcanoes go extinct, and the islands get eroded away, and then they are back under the sea again.
These are such basic questions, but we're here to learn, Eric. When that magma is erupting and the lava flows are emerging from Mauna Loa, how hot is the lava that we're talking about?
Yeah, so the type of lava that is erupting typically from these volcanoes is what we call basalt, which is the way we categorize most lava is based on the content of silica in the magma. So silica is silicon and oxygen. It makes up most of the Earth's material outside the core. It's one of the basic building blocks of rocks. And it is, in basalt, it's fairly low, meaning that it's maybe a little less than half of the rock is silica. And because of that, it produces lava flows. It has to do with how viscous, how sticky the lava is compared to something that might erupt at Mount St. Helens, which has much more silica and is much more sticky and leads to explosive eruptions. But for the basalt, when it erupts, it tends to be some of the hottest of the lavas that erupt today on Earth. So the lava flow, if you're watching like the live stream, the lava that's coming out, that's jetting out of the vent right now, is probably in the vicinity of maybe 1800 to 2000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
Which, you know, to get an idea, that's what like you turn your oven to broil, and you still have to then multiply that by a factor of 4 before you get to the thermal energy that's coming out with these lava flows. And, you know, I've been on the on Kilauea, and I've sampled this, what compared to this would be like a little dinky lava flow. And even for me as a volcanologist, the heat that radiates off of even a little lava flow that might be no wider than, you know, a few feet across is just incredibly intense.
Wow.
And, you know, you have to, you can't stay close to it for more than a few seconds before you have to back off and catch your breath because of that intense heat that's coming off of it.
I mean, just looking at the live stream, it's awe-inspiring, right? We're looking at the Earth cycle of creation, really. It's magnificent. So Eric Climetti and Catherine Cruz, hang on. We'll talk a lot more about what we can learn from Mauna Loa's eruption. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about Hawaii's Mauna Loa volcano erupting now for the first time in almost 40 years. I'm joined today by Eric Climetti. He's a volcanologist and associate professor of earth and environmental studies at Denison University. He's also a writer for the Rocky Planet blog in Discover magazine. And Catherine Cruz joins us. She's the host of The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. And we've heard from some Hawaiians about what Mauna Loa's eruption is like for them. Here's Paul Wheelis. He left a message on our Vox Pop app, and he lives in Hilo, Hawaii.
Lava flows are really beautiful if you look at the art value or the magnitude value of the immensity of the glow and the dark lava around it.
Paul's been living in Hilo for 34 years, and he says living with volcanoes is just part of his daily existence.
I was here in 2018 when Leilani Estates was covered. A lot of the houses there in Leilani Estates, a lot of my friends lost their homes. As far as the feeling here in Hawaii is we live with a volcano 24 hours a day, and we are just cautious, and we prepare, and we just kind of wait to see where the lava is going to flow.
That's Paul. He's an On Point listener in Hilo, Hawaii. And by the way, he sent us those thoughts over our On Point Vox Pop app. It's a new way to connect with us, and it's a great one. So all you have to do is, if you want to use it, download it to your phone through whichever app store you use, Apple or Google, and just look for the On Point Vox Pop app there. Now, Catherine Cruz, I know, I mean, there's a tendency for people like me far away from the volcano to somewhat romanticize it, but there are, you know, real concerns that people have to live with on a day-to-day basis. And I know you wanted to share a bunch of those.
Yeah, well, I think first off is that people have to remember that volcano Hawaii resident just talked about, you know, that flow from Kilauea, you know, overran 700 homes in a subdivision on the east side. So it's a real threat, you know. So you need to know that, yeah, if you come to Hawaii and you're scheduled to go to the Big Island, know that you've got two volcanoes erupting at the same time. But getting back to the point of the heat that we heard Eric talk about, you know, and I know it sounded silly to say, oh, well, maybe we can try to bomb the lava flow to divert it. But, you know, it is trial and error. I talked to the Hawaii Electric Light Company here, and, you know, when Kilauea was erupting, they were trying to do different things to protect their power lines, to keep the power going for the residents, for the subdivision down there. And they were doing things like, you know, wrapping the poles with insulation and cinder, you know, stones and chicken wire and concrete pipes just to try and save the wooden poles. But guess what? The heat of that magma, the lava flow, ended up burning the pole from underneath, from down below, because, you know, the lava flows, you know, go deep down. So it sounds silly, but, you know, you try to do what you can, and, you know, they didn't have much success, but they tried.
Yeah, I totally take your point there. But just one more thing about those previous attempts in decades past to sort of bomb a lava flow. Catherine, did I hear something that there was like unexploded ordnance around in places
yes.
near the volcano?
Yeah, well, you know, the amazing thing about this eruption with Mauna Loa is that you can see it from so many places. You see the glow from Kona. You see it, you know, if you're on the Hilo side, you're near a volcano. And so it's always there. I mean, I have talked to, I don't know, half a dozen different people who are living there who say, oh, yeah, you know, and scientists who say, yep, I see it from my bedroom window. It's the last thing I look at before I close my eyes. So it's always there. The county has tried to establish a new viewing areas along that main artery, that Saddle Road, the Daniel K. Inouye Highway. And, you know, they had 14,000 cars go through there. You know, it's just amazing because everybody wants to see it and you want to see it safely. Well, they did come across unexploded ordnance because that viewing area happens to be near Pohakaloa Training Area, which is an Army live fire training facility. And, you know, there's a lot of leftover stuff, you know, errant things. and fortunately, this unexploded ordnance turned out to be a training device. And so it would just emit smoke. It wasn't going to, you know, it wasn't like a grenade or anything like that that would create shrapnel is what we're told. Hmm. But they did have to shut down the viewing area. And the other point that I think is really important for anyone who was over there is you have to mind what the officials are saying about safety. You know, don't go past these areas because you don't know what's out there. You don't know if, you know, you're going to come across, you know, some old artillery or, you know, you might get too close to the lava. You know, they're just hazards, you know, between the gases, you know, Pele's hair, you know, just the Vogue. So when the civil defense says don't go in this area, you really need to heed that warning.
Mm. Well, a little bit earlier, we heard from Ingrid Johansson, who's a geophysicist at the Hawaii Volcano Observatory. And she shared a lot more thoughts with us about, you know, living with the volcano, Catherine, as you've been mentioning, and, you know, what she hopes to learn from this eruption. So here's more.
I arrived in early 2015. Just as Mauna Loa was starting to show signs of enhanced seismicity and enhanced inflation. So it was only a couple months after I arrived at HVO that the alert level was raised from green to yellow. So it's been a conversation through my entire time here at the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory about you know, how that unrest might evolve. And what things might look like when the volcano would erupt.
And once again, just as a reminder, inflation in this context is that surface swelling on a volcano that Eric Clometti explained to us a little earlier. Now, Ingrid Johansson says right now she's focused on the rapid chemistry data they can get from the newly erupted materials coming out of Mauna Loa. And she says what's coming out of this eruption is surprising.
There's an indication, at least with preliminary data, that what's being erupted now is the magma that was brought into the system starting in 2015, which is an interesting observation considering it's been 38 years since an eruption. I might have thought that, you know, there would be 38 years worth of accumulation. The story isn't over, so the chemical analysis continues.
And while that analysis continues, Johansson says this is also a great moment for scientists and any observers to appreciate the beauty of the eruption.
I would like people on the mainland to have an understanding of the deep legacy of volcanic eruptions here in Hawaii. And it's literally made the island, and it's a huge part, not just of Native Hawaiian culture, but of the culture of the residents of Hawaii now. People feel very connected with the land here. And part of it, I believe, is because you see it being created. You see the generation of new land, and you see the return of the plants after the lava flow has passed. You see that whole cycle of both destruction and creation, which is at the heart of a lava flow.
That's Ingrid Johansson, a geophysicist at the Hawaii Volcano Observatory. Now, Eric Clementi, what do you hope to learn, or what are the questions that you'd like to ask about this particular eruption of Mauna Loa?
I mean, I think what Ingrid had mentioned there about the how long that magma that's now erupting might have been down there is one that I am interested in. It's a lot of what my research is on different types of volcanoes. Like I work on Mount Hood and Lassen Peak and the Western U.S. But this question of what's happening inside a volcano before an eruption happens. And, a lot of the times the way we do that is using the geochemistry, which is, looking at either the composition of the crystals that are in the lava that's erupting, because all this lava, there are crystals in there, or looking at just the composition of the lava as a whole, if you ground it up and analyzed it as a single thing with the glass and the crystals that we call frozen lava. Is a lot of the times we just call it glass because that's what it really is. It's volcanic glass. But the time scales of events underneath volcanoes can vary so much, trying to understand how volcanoes like Mauna Loa behave in the months to years before an eruption, in what's going on inside the volcano, how much new magma is being pumped in, how much old magma is stored underneath there between eruptions, and how do those two things interact before an eruption. Those are the sorts of things that I find fascinating, because it's a big unknown. We can't go down there and watch it happen. We have to hope the volcano erupts and brings up material that then we can sort of parse out from that material what was going on far below our feet for maybe, months to years to decades before the eruption happened.
Mm. And now, it suddenly occurred to me that maybe it's because we are so interconnected now in the modern world, and we have such quick access to imagery and data. But it kind of feels like there's been more global volcanic activity than before. And again, I'm completely going to accept you, Eric, saying that that's not true, because volcanoes are always active or somewhere on planet Earth. But I was thinking about, the Tonga volcano explosion almost a year ago in January of 2022. I mean, that one was, so large and so loud, it was heard in Alaska, and it shook the entire crust of the Earth. And now we have Mauna Loa, and there's obviously been lots of activity in Icelandic volcanoes. Is this an unusual year at all?
This, I'm afraid to say, is pretty much par for the course for volcanic activity on the planet. You kind of do a random sampling at any given point. There's probably a good, 10 to a dozen volcanoes actively erupting someplace on the planet. A lot of them might be very small, so they don't really make the news. They might be in very remote locations like Mount Erebus in Antarctica, or some of these remote islands in the Indian Ocean or the Atlantic or the Pacific. And I think there you hit it on the head, that it's really the ability to monitor the global volcanic scene that has changed a lot, because 100 years ago you would have a volcanic eruption that maybe was happening somewhere in the in the, like I said, in the middle of the Indian Ocean, let's say, where there weren't a lot of people, that news might not reach you for months, if ever. But these days, you can just hop on the internet, go over to the NASA Worldview website, which has near real-time satellite monitoring images, and look for volcanic plumes or volcanic activity, hot, you know, thermal hot spots on the planet, and just see these eruptions occurring in that satellite data. So we have this perception that there's more activity. It's much more that we are able to see almost every little burst that comes out of volcanoes across the planet.
Mm. Well, here's one more thing from Ingrid Johansson, because of course there's always the question of what might happen next with Mauna Loa. And she told us that a challenge for scientists at the observatory is to determine the volume of lava in the volcano, what's already come out, and what might still be left to be erupted, and also where that remaining lava will go.
One of the question marks right now is, will the flow stay where it is in the saddle area, or will it start to move from one side or the other? And where it's flowed right now is really kind of the top of the saddle. So it's sort of equally likely to go to the Kona side as to the Hilo side. So that's something where we just have to watch, and it could be very subtle changes in where one, you know, finger of flow develops versus another that influences, you know, which side it will go to.
Eric, what is that saddle area that Ingrid's referring to?
So the whole island is, like I said, there's multiple volcanoes on the big island. There's Kilauea, there's Mauna Loa. Across the saddle road is Mauna Kea. And then down sort of closer to the Kona area is Hualalai. And then there's the much older Kohala volcano to sort of the northwest. And all of these volcanoes, other than Kohala, are potentially active volcanoes. Two of them are erupting. Mauna Kea erupted about 4,000 years ago, if I remember correctly. And then Hualalai, you know, some of the area around the airport at Kona is built on lava flows from that volcano that some of those erupted as recently as 1800. So that saddle road area we're looking at is the saddle areas that the space between the volcanoes at where they overlap.
Mm. Well, Catherine, we've just got about a minute left to go here. Wanted to give you the last word today on the significance of the Mauna Loa eruption.
Well, you know, for a lot of the residents that live on that island, that road, if that is cut off, just be aware that we pay very high gas prices here in the state. I think the prices on the mainland went down to $3. Well, we're still paying $5 for unleaded and probably close to $6 for a premium. So if you've got to go the long way because that saddle road, that highway is cut off, you know, it's definitely pocketbook. it hurts.
Mm. Well, Catherine Cruz, host of The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio, joining us today from Honolulu. Catherine, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Anytime.
And Eric Clemente, a volcanologist and associate professor of earth and environmental studies at Denison University, with us from Granville, Ohio. Professor Clemente, thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.